People who really want to have a good time won't come to a slaughterhouse. And we've got entirely too many troublemakers here. Too many 40-year-old adolescents, felons, power drinkers, and trustees of modern chemistry. It's going to change.
Man, that sure sounds good. But a lot of the guys who come in here, we can't handle one-on-one. Even two-on-one.
Don't worry about it. All you have to do is follow three simple rules. One, never underestimate your opponent. Expect the unexpected. Two, take it outside. Never start anything inside the bar unless it's absolutely necessary. And three, be nice.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Wrestling Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to get an obscenely sized monster truck, go down to the local car dealership, and just run over all the cars, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thanks. I haven't done that in years. Yeah.
When was the last time?
Back in 2009. I was 13. I was going through a wild streak.
Yeah. You hit up the local Ford dealership? Or?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I feel you. They always get you, and you gotta fight back sometimes, you know?
There was like a small defect on my Ford Mobile, so I ran through the entire dealership.
There you go. No consequences, and you're still here today.
Yep, precisely.
Love to see you. Well, welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the podcast where every week Perk and I review a movie that's connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, we post every Friday on podcast services and now YouTube, so go check that out. But yeah, tell your friends about it. Come watch movies with us. But last week, we watched a little movie called Point Break, an absolute classic. And I said, we need more Swayze. So we watched this week a movie called Roadhouse. Perk, why don't you intro it for us?
Yeah, all right. Roadhouse is a 1989 joint directed by Rowdy Harrington, starring Patrick Swayze and some other people probably, but...
Keith David.
Yeah, Keith David, Sam Elliott, Kelly Lynch. Yeah, and it follows our main character who just, like, obnoxiously has no last name. It's just Dalton.
I didn't realize that.
He's a cooler at bars where he, you know, straightens them up and gets the tough customers out and sews up his own wounds and, you know, that kind of stuff.
There we go.
Yeah, a couple little fun facts. According to Kelly Lynch, every time Bill Murray saw this movie on TV, he called her husband to tease him about the sex scene.
Okay. Was she like hanging out with Bill Murray a lot?
I assume they are friends.
Yeah, no, okay.
Like Bill Murray called her husband to give him guff over the Patrick Swayze sex scene.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that's a little. Okay.
just every time. Just, hey, buddy, guess what's on the TV? and then filming was kind of tough because Patrick Swayze was Patrick Swayze at the time. And so, like cars of women would just like pull up directly to his trailer to try and meet him. And there was an extra on set who was too absorbed staring at him and tripped with like a full platter of glasses and stuff. Because Patrick Swayze be like that.
Yeah. I was worried you were going to say he was being himself as in like he was like an asshole, but no, it's just the people couldn't stop looking at
Correct.
Him.
Yep.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that makes sense, you know? So, Perk, normally, when one of us has seen the movie already, they defer to the other person to let them go first. I'm cutting that off. Right?
You're
I
not
go going to
allow me. I'm
not going to allow it. Okay?
I understand.
Here's what I got to say about this movie. I think the first third to maybe the first half of this movie, near perfect. Okay? You got fucking Patrick Swayze being as cool as can be, coming in. He knows what he wants. He knows what he needs. He's here to fix the bar, and he's damn good at it. All right? You got the cartoon villain of the town. You got the love interest. It's a great time. Now, unfortunately, and I remembering when I watched this the first time, when watching it again, because like I'm watching it last night. I'm like, man, this movie's so fucking good. And then the second half of the movie starts in like the third act, and I'm like, why does it get so goddamn messy at the end of this movie? Like, what is going on? Why are these characters doing what they're doing? And the ending is just laughable. So it's just, I wish this movie was better. I don't know if it's the editing or the script, but I think it starts out so strong, and then it really falls apart in the end, which is just so sad, because I really have a soft spot for this movie. I think the premise is great, and it's a really fun time, but I think it just really falls apart at the end, unfortunately.
Fair enough. My turn.
Mm-hmm.
Am I allowed?
You're allowed to go.
I have, like, no problems at all with this movie. none whatsoever. It was fun. It was so fun all the way through. I disagree. I thought the messy part at the end was awesome. I thought it totally went off the rails. I mean, he literally rips out a guy's throat. and just the ending, which you said is, like, comical. You're right, but the ending is, like... Okay, so as it's been known on this podcast,
mm-hmm.
I watch the indie, the A24, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Where generally there's a movie with no plot, and then the dog dies, and then the guy jumps off a bridge. Like, mm-hmm. that's the mm-hmm. type of movie mm-hmm. I watch. This movie, the ending is like stand up and cheer type cathartic. It's just like, oh no, he's going to spare him, and then it's like, nope. Everybody shoots in.
Literally everyone comes in. All of the people in the fiery squad.
They just decide, nope, you're dead.
Well, because that's... we're skipping to the end of this movie, because that's the thing. It's like, you're supposed to feel, like, good that he chooses not to kill him, but it doesn't work because he just killed, like, four guys on his way to get to Brad. Okay? He just stabbed a dude right in the fucking chest. Like, he just killed a bunch of people. I don't... like, just kill Brad and save everybody else. He's the worst guy in the town. So the fact that we're supposed to be like, oh, thank God he didn't kill Brad, but then immediately, yeah, he gets the fucking firing squad from all the guys. It's just like, what was the point of this? And then he still gets the girl at the end. Like, no, it's just...
there's plausible deniability, right? Like, the guy that he threw a knife into his chest and then he fell off the balcony and landed face down on the knife in his chest. Maybe it didn't catch anything fatal. Yeah, he could be alright. The polar bear guy is fine.
He's fine. I was so happy he was alive, because I'm like, how would he have died in that? Like,
from the polar bear falling on him? Yeah.
But like, how? You know, yeah, whatever. But, yeah, so it's just, that's the thing, is like, the whole bit of like him killing somebody in the past and that like haunting him, and then like Elizabeth getting like mad at him for killing a guy, which like is totally fair.
Yeah,
I just needed a little bit more exposition on how he was feeling, because a lot of times we just get his kind of facial expressions, and normally I like that, but in the end of this movie, it just got a little bit messy of like, okay, what are the motivations with him? Or not really motivation, what is his emotion? Like, what is his emotional state? And what is he thinking? And, you know, because I just, it gets a bit muddy, and I wish it was a little bit more clear with him.
I disagree.
Okay.
Because Patrick Swayze is just running around without a shirt on, killing people. And it's great. A quick aside before I forget it. There's one line in this movie where I'm like, wow, that was like out of nowhere, shockingly, like badass, I think.
Well, what is the one I'm thinking about?
Well,
is
yeah.
Is it the one that Jimmy says?
Yeah, he says, I effed guys like you in prison. And it's like, whoa.
That came out of fucking nowhere, dude.
Yeah. And like, that's like pretty hard, I think.
I think, I don't know. It's so just shocking. I remember the first time I watched this movie, that out loud, I heard that line go, oh my God. Like, it's wild.
I wish though that, oh, what's the movie? It's Dodgeball, I think. Mm. I think it's Dodgeball, where it's,
okay.
Is it Happy Gilmore? No, I think it's Dodgeball. I eat pieces like shit for you for, like, or I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast. You eat pieces of shit for breakfast? Like, I wanted Patrick Swayze to be like, you effed guys in prison?
It's like, you do what you gotta do, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, that line just comes out of nowhere. And like, honestly, I'm glad Jimmy dies. Jimmy fucking sucks. All right, he's a piece of shit.
And he gets a pretty epic death, too. He just gets his throat literally clawed out, and then he just gets pushed off into the river.
Yeah, so he's just like, fuck you, Brad, and like throws him across the river to float over. Yeah. Yeah, going back to the beginning of this movie, just
we should probably talk about the movie as a whole.
Like, Swayze is coming in and is knowing exactly what needs to be done. All right, he shows the first night. He's just clocking everything. All right, that girl's selling drugs. All right, this dude's a temperamental bouncer. You know, he's seeing all the problems, and he's like, all right, I'm fixing this shit immediately. And I love he's got the three rules. I love how he goes to, like, he gets the shitty car. He buys a ton of spare tires ahead of time because he fucking knows, like, what's going to happen. Like, it's just – it's so satisfying to just see him clean up the place.
It's really – and the things you're talking about are really good characterization of, like, helping the audience understand how good he is at this without telling us. You know?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Little things, like him buying up as many spare tires as he can fit in his car. Like, it just shows that he's been down this road, you know?
It's great. And I love how we see kind of the, evolution of the bar over time as it, like, visually upgrades as well as it gets, like, nicer. And that makes sense because the guy's like, I came into money. I want to clean up the place. So he's, you know, funding everything. And, it's just, like, super satisfying to watch. And I really – the whole first half, like I said, I think it's just pretty much perfect watching all that kind of go down.
Another fun fact I forgot to mention, but maybe you knew this. The guitarist and singer is blind.
So is he actually blind?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I knew, like, he was, like, blind. The character was blind. I didn't know if the
I couldn't even tell that the character was blind until I looked it up and I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, no, he was
great.
That's, I mean,
that's
all
where he gets the cool, like, laying the guitar across his lap style.
Yeah, it's sick. Well, all the music they're playing is fucking awesome. I love the soundtrack of the movie.
If you're gonna, because it's the Jeff Healey band is a real band, so if you're gonna bring in a band, this is like the absolute best way to do it, and the whole vibe of their music fits perfectly in the setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I
love when they're behind a chain link fence.
I was just about to say that. Like, I love how you were saying with like Swayze characterization. It's just kind of show don't tell. It's the same thing with the bar. Like, you show up, it's like the fact that the band is behind a cage, you know, this is a bad place, right? And people are throwing bottles constantly. Right. There's a bar fight that breaks out, and people are getting just absolutely wrecked.
I absolutely love the scene when he comes into the bar and just everything is hitting the fan.
Yeah.
I love that. It's so great. Yeah. It's just like an awesome set piece. And they got the goofy, breakaway tables and, you know, smashing bottles all over. It was super fun.
And also, he has this, like, legendary status. Like, people have heard of him. You know, it's like, oh, it's Dalton, you know. He killed a guy down in Memphis. And he ripped his throat out. Like, that's hinted at, like, the beginning of the movie, like, when he first shows up, someone mentions that, like, oh, he ripped a guy's throat out. He's like, no way.
But no way.
That's what happened. You know, that's his ultimate move. He's just so fun to watch. So I have to ask you, I'm sure you maybe caught it in opening credits. Like, what did you think about Sam Elliott showing up and being, like, the mentor?
So I knew he was in it. But I, like, this is another one of those movies where I can't conceptualize Sam Elliott not being an old man. So he showed up and I'm like, oh my god, Sam Elliott used to not be an old man?
I mean, he's still got gray hair in this.
Yeah, but it's like only partially gray. It's like, this must have been from ancient times. No, I thought it was awesome. He is 150% the perfect casting for that role.
Yeah.
No 100%. One could possibly be better than Sam Elliott for that. Because he's got the gravitas, he's got the old southern drawl, you know, and he's believable as like a tough guy. Mm-hmm. And they have some scenes of him beating up guys. It's I think it's so good. I think they have such a good dynamic together.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think when I first time watched it, I didn't see him in the opening credits, so I popped so hard when he showed up. I'm like, that's fucking Sam Elliott. And he's like a main character, and he's the mentor. He's the legendary Wade Gary. He's even more legendary than Dalton is.
Yeah.
And I'm now realizing how stupid it is that Dalton doesn't have a last name, because Wade Garrett's got a last name.
Yep. Everyone. Well, actually, I don't think the Doctor has a first or last name.
Which Doctor? Like Elizabeth Clay?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Sorry, she was she did not have a lot of character depth, so I forgot.
Yeah, I actually want to ask you too. Speaking of like love interest, did you think that I think her name is Denise was going to be the love interest?
No, because
she tries giving him the eyes in the beginning.
Well, initially, yes, and I honestly don't really understand what her character is there for.
Yeah, that was kind of
half-baked. Other than to, like, show that Brad Wesley's bad and maybe hint that he has a thing for hot blondes, I guess. But, yeah, like, the scene where she's beaten up at, like, doing aerobics at his house. And I don't really understand what her character necessarily needed to be there for, but...
Yeah.
if not just another excuse to show a topless woman.
They didn't
even need excuses, really. They're just they're going for it. You know, they're leaning into that R rating.
Yeah, I think when I first watched it, when she like shows up, I'm like, oh, she's gonna be the love interest, and I like that kind of fake out.
Yeah,
but I agree, her character, I think it could have been a good character and like useful to the story, but they kind of just forget about her, and then yeah, they have her like strip at the end. It's like, okay, but like I was hoping that after we see that like Jimmy like beat her, that she was gonna help out somehow or like come around, yeah. But she just kind of just still plays into Brad's stuff. And I agree. She's kind of there to show that he like gets jealous easily, which like no shit, he's a movie villain. But yeah, and that's the thing. Really, this movie is 2 hours. It definitely did not need to be. I think there's a lot of scenes that could have been cut.
You could cut it down to 90 minutes if you get rid of all the sex scenes and just like like bare-breasted women scenes.
Yeah, 100%.
But then a lot of people who went to see this movie probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, you're maybe right. I don't want to believe that, but you're probably right. This is like a very small.
Maybe that was a sweetener. Maybe the idea was if we put a bunch of topless women in here, then the guys who got dragged to the Patrick Swayze movie will have a good time too.
I get because this is
it is absolutely
dancing, right?
Not a chick flick, but
this is an action movie.
Patrick Swayze was a draw regardless of whatever movie.
Yeah, I suppose. Another thing that I feel like could have been cut, this is such a nitpick, but it just really sticks out to me, is the scene, it's the morning after he fires the bartender, and then Carrie shows up with like breakfast. She's like, you shouldn't have done that. And it's like, we already knew that. Like the way the bartender was acting, he's like, are you sure? We knew something was up.
Yeah.
And that whole, the scene of her like bringing him breakfast was just like, we didn't need that. And then she's not really a character. Like if that was to develop her character and have her around more, it would have been fine.
But then all of a sudden she can like sing. She's not in the movie anymore. Yeah.
We found out she can like sing, which I don't buy that for a second. It was obviously somebody else singing over her.
Right.
But it was just a weird thing of like, we already got the foreshadowing that the bartender was up to something. You didn't have to like slam it in my face, which right. I just thought it was weird because the rest of the movie is pretty good about not like having too much exposition. But I don't know. Like that's what I'm saying. This movie could be cut down to, like I said, 90 minutes, I think, pretty
definitely.
Easily. But yeah, speaking about Sam Elliott again and like their relationship, that's another one where it's like I wish it was a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit more clear. Because like obviously they're buds, but there's some conflict and like Elliott calls him out for like still living in the past. And then they like kind of fight and Elliott leaves. Then he comes back and he dies. And it's just like, and that's the part where I'm like, Swayze, where's your head at? Like, because obviously you're not over you killing a dude because then you killed Jimmy. So like, I don't know. That's where it gets really muddy. And I wanted a little bit more strong like character development or like a strong, like a more clear arc. And that's where I think this movie could have been like a lot better. And yeah, it's cool to see him kill a bunch of guys at the end, but it just, I don't know. It just really just devolves into just like classic action movie, and they could have been like a step above that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that their relationship is pretty well fleshed out, and I think Wade Garrett's death is kind of what pushes him over the edge, and that's why he goes on the rampage. And it's not ever spoken, but he's obviously like a father figure.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, a mentor, and clearly, this is a guy who never stays in one place too long, so he has very few lasting relationships. And I mean, up until Elizabeth, it's like just Wade Garrett, seemingly. Mm-hmm. Like that's about it. Other people just know of him, but don't like know him. So,
yeah. Well, and that's the other thing too is like, again, maybe I'm just I don't know being too critical, but it's like, does he want to stay just because of Elizabeth, or is it also because of like? He sees how bad Brad is, or is he also like become friends with Red and like the owner of the Double Deuce? Like, what is the thing that's keeping him there the most? And why does he fall in love with the town? It's all kind of implied, but like, I don't know. I wanted a little bit more of just him, I guess, being more clear about his feelings and maybe like having a scene where he like kind of, I mean, he does kind of flip out when he kills Jimmy, but like him flipping out about the indecision of like, I'd normally leave and then I have to stay, or you know, I'm going to hurt somebody again. I don't know. I need like one scene where he just really like lets it all out, and we don't get that.
I disagree pretty much entirely. I don't think it's ever in question what his like motivations are. I think you're right. I think it's like all of those things, and they do a pretty good job of exemplifying that. Like, they show his concern for Emmett when his house gets exploded. Mm. Every building just explodes in this movie, by the way.
So many massive explosions.
Like, his concern, like, he runs into a burning building to make sure Red's okay. And I think he's developed a relationship with the people. He has a natural hate against this, like, egalitarian, oppressive douchebag. And mm-hmm. and the girl he loves who lives there and doesn't want to leave, you know? I think that there's plenty enough laid out without him having, like, a soliloquy on the rooftop, like, oh, woe is me. I really love Elizabeth and also this town, you know?
Yeah, I guess maybe it's the fact that, like, I assume in every town he has to work, he makes some relationships with, like, the auto parts shop guy. Because this, I imagine this kind of thing happens every single time where his car gets fucked up. Because we know, because he prepares for it. So it's like, that doesn't seem, like, out of the ordinary. And, like, finds a place to live every time. And I'm not saying he falls in love every time. But, like, those seem like just part of his to-do list of, like, find a good auto shop, find a shitty car, find a place to live, and, like, maintain those relationships enough where I don't have any issues.
Yeah. But also, like,
why is this one different, you know?
The difference may be that none of the other places he's worked were ruled by a domestic terrorist.
Like, but he said, I've seen, like, guys like Brad a million times. Like, yeah. Why is this one the difference where he's going to stick around and actually fight him, you know?
I don't know, though. I feel like it would be so out of, like, is there really some guy in every small town blowing up
people's houses?
I'm not saying every,
but I'm just saying, like, his character says, I've seen guys like him, like, plenty of times, you know? And Elliot's like, let's fucking leave. This is not our problem.
Yeah.
Indicating, like, they've done this before, but they just leave the towns after certain things happen. So I just needed, why is it different? And maybe it's just Elizabeth, which, like, is whatever.
I mean, it's just a perfect storm. There's just, like, the right amount of motivation.
Yeah.
But I don't think him spelling it out would have made for a better movie.
Yeah. And maybe if we just cut it down a bit and had less of the scenes where nothing really happens,
there's
it would help
quite
with the
a
pacing.
Bit of filler, yeah. Like, you're not really developed. I don't know. Not the biggest fan of sex scenes in movies, but you're not really developing anything there. We already knew they were in love and just kind of taking some time, but...
Yeah, that scene and then the scene after Red's place got blown up and Brad's, like, at the Double Deuce and, like, Denise, or whatever name it, Elite Denise, goes up there and, like, strips. Like, that whole thing just took way too long. And then Jimmy's like, somebody fight me. And it's like, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
There's a lot of filler to work in topless women.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, which is unfortunate. Because, I think the core of this movie is really solid.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Brad as the villain?
I think he's great. He's cartoony man in top hat, you know?
Yeah. But it, like, works. It weirdly works.
It does. He's super believable. He plays the part well. Has to be kind of like, I mean, he literally has to be cartoony, but he plays it with enough nuance that he's not, like, literally a cartoon. It's just the character he's playing is, like, unreal evil.
Right. Yeah. Like, I think I think he totally fits in and he's totally fine. It would have been a little bit more believable if, like, his MO wasn't exploding buildings in the, like, largest way possible and having a monster truck run through an auto dealership.
Wrecking a dealership.
Yeah, it's just like insane shit.
That was my biggest, I think, gripe. Not really a gripe. This is a joke, but that, like, in real life, what would happen is, like, immediately, Dalton would look at Brad the wrong way and be in jail. Like, he would just make up some charge and have his flight of lawyers just. Like, put him in prison for 40 years for, like, looking at him the wrong way. That's how reality would work. But
yeah.
I'm glad that instead of doing that, he just blows up houses and car dealerships.
And also, like, why'd he blow up Emmett's house but not the barn where he knows Dalton is staying? Like,
yeah, he's just kind of going after the periphery.
Yeah.
Like, almost warning shots, I guess. But it's not really a warning shot when you blow up someone's home.
Yeah, and he clearly wants Dalton gone and or dead. Yeah. It's just wild. And then, yeah, we get the climax with fucking Red and the Double Deuce owner and the auto ship.
The auto dealer guy. Yep.
Just shotgunning him so many times.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
It.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say about the movie or any recommendations?
No, I can't think of any. It's not a genre I go after too often of 90s exploitation action movies, but I don't know.
Yeah. I'd say Lethal Weapon, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Fair classic. Enough. I mean, that's more of a buddy cop, you know, joint, but
same era,
same kind of general feel. And you know, you got Gary Busey in that, which is, we just saw him last week and he's fantastic in Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
But there we go. All right, well, that's our review of Roadhouse. And that actually concludes our little break from doing our Asian movies. We'll reveal our watching next week at the end of this. But we got to do our bonus reviews first. I'll start us off, Perk. I watched a movie that you recommended.
No way.
Shocker.
You're lying to me.
I had some friends over there, and we watched Rye Lane together.
Oh, nice. I'm curious what you thought.
I liked it. So I wanted to ask you, because I don't know if you mentioned this when we talked about last week, so much fisheye lens.
Yeah, I didn't mention it, but I noticed, yeah, there was a lot of fisheye.
I don't know how I feel about it, because, like, the benefits are, like, you feel closer to the characters, and I just closer in the movie, just because, like, obviously the center feels, like, up close. But then there's a lot of, like, blurry, like the backgrounds are very blurry, yeah, kind of vignette-y, yeah. Like, very frequently. And it was like, I appreciate they committed to the choice. I was just, it's just very unique and like I hadn't really seen stuff like that before. So I think I liked it. But yeah, I love the characters. I think they had a great chemistry. I love the story. I love the, it's not all in one day, but it mostly is. And I really like that, you know, trope or whatever in movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, super funny. Some really funny like cutaways and flashbacks. And like the sets and the world was very vibrant. It almost gave me vibes of like Sorry to Bother You.
Sure.
I not see quite that surreal because it's set in the real world, but like that kind of similar vibe, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, no, really liked it. Liked how short it was and solid ending. And yeah, it was a feel good. But yeah, it was definitely like, I think it's a little bit above just stylistically. Like, they definitely made some very strong choices with the lenses in particular they used. Like I saw a lot of fisheye. And I think it mostly works. But it was definitely took some getting used to, I think.
Yeah, I think so. The way I explained away the fisheye is it has a clear central focus on the characters, mm-hmm. but you still get a much larger scope of the scenery of the world. Because if it's just like, if it's a, you know, shot of just the two of them walking, you only might get, you know, one building at a time. But mm-hmm. with the fisheye, you can kind of see down the lane a little bit.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I liked, but I'm kind of a, I'm a simp for just like creative shots and stuff like that, and so it might not be like perfectly executed, but like it works for me because I like that kind of stuff. You know, I'm sick of seeing the same shot over and over and over.
Yeah, for sure. It was funny. I was watching it with my friends, and she gets like secondhand social anxiety from watching stuff, and she was a mess this entire movie. She like couldn't handle it, and like I understand that. I was vibing. I enjoyed it because like for me, it's like I get that from live content. If somebody's like messing up on a live thing, I get like super anxious. But I'm like, it's scripted. It'll all end fine.
I think the fact that it's set in a different country helps.
I agree. Yeah, it really helps. Yeah.
Like, but that scene at like the family barbecue in the backyard is just so, and he gets on aux and it's all of his sad boy music because he's down
it's
bad.
So it's great.
Just, it's awesome.
Also, did you catch
being super uncomfortable at that for sure?
Did you catch the big cameo in that movie?
Was it Hugh Grant?
Colin Firth.
Whatever. Same thing.
Yeah. But my one friend caught that, and I didn't notice it. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. I thought that was. I was like, another one of those moments where I'm like, is that? It wasn't Hugh Grant, but I knew who it was. I just didn't know.
You're close. Him and Colin Firth are pretty close. I'll give it to you.
Interchangeable enough. Yeah. It doesn't he?
He's the burrito guy.
Yeah, and isn't his name like Colin or something?
I don't remember actually. I don't think it's Colin, but
I think there's like a tip to it. Or they're at what? It's the cafe is Love Guactually.
Yes.
Which is a nice, another nice tip of the cap.
I pegged the name, but then I didn't put two and two together with Colin Firth. So, I just realized, too, the other thing that makes it feel like Sorry to Bother You is his fucking friend who's the artist, the photographer.
Yeah.
Like, that feels very Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah, definitely. And, we know more about Jupiter than we know about the human mouth.
Yeah, and that end gallery, my friend was like, I didn't need to see that. And it's like, It's a bit much.
That one's mine. That one's mine.
But yeah, I definitely recommend Rare Lane, especially because it's so short, you know.
Yeah, 82 minutes, in and out, simple, rom-com, good time, funny, you know.
Did you see the post-credit scene?
Was it the, it's like a blooper?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. Stick around for the credits on that one.
I sticked around for the credits because the song that was playing during the credits was awesome. I mentioned I loved the score. I think Sampha was doing a few of the songs, and he has just an amazing voice. So
yeah, that was great.
But yeah, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, no, we were something to watch. I'm like, you know what? Perk recommended this movie that's short. Let's watch that.
Hella short.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good selling point.
Definitely. What did you watch this week?
I had to go into work on Saturday morning.
Oof.
And I got out of work at about 9:30, and I was like, all right, I got nothing to do. I'm going to go over to the mall. I'm going to go see a 10:30 a.m. showing of the Mario movie.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. What'd you think?
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's not very good. Like, as a movie, there's just nothing there. As a string of references that I ate up, perfect.
That's what I'm saying. The references are so good.
Yeah, the whole movie is pretty much just like, all right, we need to string together set pieces so that we can go to DK Jungle, so we can go to Rainbow Road, you know?
Yeah.
The plot is nothing. Pretty much ineffectual. It matters almost nothing at all. The animation is really good. Aside from the normal people are just like prototype Illumination normal people animation, which I was like, oh yeah, that's right, this is who's making this movie. But
yeah, since the dog too is like the classic Illumination dog.
Yeah But I thought all the voice acting was good enough.
Fred Armisen? Are you with me on Armisen? That it just was didn't fit.
It definitely could have been better if it was like, it had to be like an old guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Fred Armisen pretending to be an old guy. But, and also I wasn't entirely sold because Keegan-Michael Key is Toad, right?
Yeah.
But it's like vocoded, so it's much higher.
It's debatable if that's actually true or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It sounded a lot higher pitched, but
there's probably a little bit of juice on it, but he was doing like, he can do like a pretty good Toad voice, just straight up.
Fair enough. I thought it would have been funny if it was literally just Keegan-Michael Key's voice on Toad, but no, Jack Black was funny. Mm-hmm. I think his songs were pretty good. Like, I'm glad they gave Jack Black some songs as Bowser. I think my suspicions were correct. This is a, like, it's a Mario movie, and if you're, you know, elderly like we are, and you love Mario, all the references are just awesome.
Yeah.
But from a comedic standpoint, there's really nothing to dig into. It is, like, very, very child-friendly. And in this case, I mean that in a bad way.
What about the Luma, though? The Luma's doing the pretty hardcore dark humor.
The exception was the Luma was amazing. Yeah. I freaking loved the sadistic Luma. That was the only time in the movie I, like, actually laughed. I think part of it, too, was I was pretty tired. And there's not too much going on most of the movie, so I was nice in my nice super recliner or whatever they got, and I was able to stay awake. It was not. I've only fallen asleep at a movie one time, by the way. Fun fact.
Oh.
It was The Post, which was a garbage Oscar bait flick with Meryl Streep about the head of, I think it was the Washington Post, would make sense, had to decide whether or not to release the, it was like the papers that proved there were missiles in Cuba or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was awful. It was Meryl Streep standing around pensively for 2.5 hours. I literally fell asleep in the theater. But yeah, this was not that close. I was never actually asleep. But
I mean, I feel like it's worth saying, but just the music. I think the music was incredible. No, how they incorporated all of the video game songs.
By far, the best part of the movie was the original score. I think that the licensed music is okay.
Yeah, it didn't really fit always, but
it was good enough. Like when they played, when is it what Funky Kong who picks them up at the door?
It's not Funky Kong. It's some not. Random Kong that we don't just know
wearing,
yet.
Wearing
it should
a
have been.
Coat.
Should have been Funky Kong.
Yeah, it should have been. But like that type of music when they're just doing like 80s synth pop type stuff. Yeah, I'm in for it. I Need a Hero was kind of Take On Me. Perfect.
Yeah.
I Need a Hero was a little meh.
That song is so overused now. Someone needs to make a new song that has the word hero in it, because that song is just always the go-to and so overused.
But the actual original score, I don't know who the composer was, but his take on, I'm just forgetting the name, but his take on the original Mario music is so good. It's like, what if we made this just into a cinematic, like, what if we just cinematify the Mario score? And it's perfect. It's by far the best part of the movie for me.
Yeah. So the music was by, I don't know. So Koji Kondo is the original composer. I don't know if he was also involved, but then Brian Tyler.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think what he did was incredible, especially the Invincibility Star at the end. That track was just fucking sick.
So good.
So yeah, I think that's definitely like worth seeing if you're a Mario fan, see this movie.
If
you're not
you're a
Mario
fan,
you don't need to see it.
This movie. Also, the reason I went to see it is because they kicked the streaming release down the road. They literally said indefinitely, and I'm like, all right, I'll go see it.
Yeah.
It's worth seeing on the big screen because the animation is really good. And you'll be in and out in 90 minutes, which is always a bonus.
So I have to ask now, Perk, this movie is making Buca Dolores, right? What do you want the next Nintendo movie to be?
I'm going to pretend like I'm thinking very hard about this, but like obviously Zelda.
Yeah.
100% yeah. Zelda. But the trouble is, I don't want them to make a Zelda movie if it's as kiddie as this movie was, you know?
Yeah.
Zelda
unless it's like a Link's Awakening.
Sure.
Because that's like a Dream on
Wind
Island.
Waker.
Kind of
yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of thing too would be, it'd be okay. Mm-hmm. If that's the style they go for. But like if they're doing like a Ocarina of Time as a movie or something like that, you got to lean into the more mature themes, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think that's a slam dunk. I don't know when it'll happen or if it'll happen, but I would love to see a Metroid movie.
Oh, that'd be great as well, yeah.
That would have to be also more dark and not as kiddie, but I think that'd be just sick because Metroid is just freaking cool.
And I think, honestly, like, do more with Mario. I think, like, a Mario – they could do something with Mario Galaxy. It'd be hard, but – or, like, Mario Odyssey would be perfect. It's literally called Odyssey. Just tell a spanning story of Mario adventuring through a world. They do tease it a little bit.
They do. They tease Odyssey and Galaxy.
Yeah, and they have like a Yoshi cameo, although I kind of wish Yoshi were around.
Yeah, he'll be there in the second one.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but no, we're going to get more because, my God, it is cleaning up and it's going to continue to clean up, I think, for a few more weeks.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those it's filling a vacuum because there's not much at the theater that people are dying to see. Like, the biggest release recently is, what, Evil Dead Rise?
Yeah.
Not quite the same audience as Super Mario Brothers.
Sisu.
Yeah, Sisu. Also, like, you can't go to that with the fam.
Yeah, for sure. I got one other kind of half review. And don't get mad at me, all right?
All right.
But I just rewatched an anime I like, okay?
That's allowed. You're allowed to do that.
I just, I was in the mood for it. So I rewatched the first half of Jujutsu Kaisen. Because season 2 is coming out in July, I believe. And it's so good, man. I won't go too long on it, but I think when I first watched it, I mostly liked it because the action is really good. It's MAPPA. I mean, they're the goats right now in animation. The action's really good, and the music's really good, and the humor is pretty solid. And it's essentially just like modern Naruto, which is Naruto like set in like 2022. But on the rewatch, I think there's a lot more depth there, and I'm just really looking forward to seeing more of it soon. And I think it is a little bit underrated as an anime. So if you haven't seen it and you like shonen, check out Jujutsu Kaisen for sure.
Is that your last? Do you have more?
Nah, that's it.
Okay, I'll slide in a smidge of a bonus just because you had recommended it. But I caught up to the episode 6 of Ted Lasso.
Ooh.
I'm still one behind, but goodness me, you were right. Episode six is so good.
It's so good. Like, that's the episode I needed.
It easily slots in as one of my favorites of the series, up there with, like, the Christmas episode, and I think it kind of reminded me of Beard After Dark a little bit.
I think I liked it way better than Beard After Dark. Beard After Dark didn't work for me.
I really liked Beard After Dark, but I know I'm in the minority on that one, and that's fine.
Yeah, I think because I like Beard when he's with other characters. When he's by himself, I don't like him that much.
Sure, fair enough.
But, no, yeah, it was, to me, like, an improved Beard After Dark, and I think all the storylines were just perfect.
And there was resolution on what we had talked about earlier, and I think it was a really good scene.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. But yeah, just basically the whole team gets a night off in Amsterdam, and they decide what to do with it. I am a little mad that the team didn't go see Martin Garrix.
Dude, that was such a funny name drop. Like, holy shit. Yeah, that was cool.
My cousin. I was hoping they would go, and then there would be a cameo, but that would have been a little goofy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm also behind because my friend I watch it with, who they have Apple TV Plus, is going to be out of town for the foreseeable future. So I have to wait now until the season ends to then watch the last four episodes, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah. So you'll get ahead of me, I'm sure.
We'll see.
Yeah. But Ted Lasso, I think I'm hoping it'll end. Like, now we have episode 5 and 6. I'm like, okay, we're in a good setup here.
It's definitely gearing up. It's gearing up well.
Yeah. So it'll be good. But there we go. That is our show for this week. It is now time to review what we're watching next week. So we did a Chinese movie string. Now it's time to go to a different country in Asia. We're going to India, baby, because we both love RRR. We want to see more movies out of India. This first one we're watching, Perk found a connection, and it's like, sometimes you got to do this, all right?
It is a stretch. I'm not sure how we're going to do it, but we're going to try our best.
Honestly, I thought we were going to just give up, but we found a way in, okay? So we watched the movie 310 to Yuma a while ago. And that movie was our friend Ben Foster. We're a fan. He was in a movie called The Machinist. Who's The Machinist directed by? Chad Stahelski, also the John Wick guy. Chad Stahelski had a cameo in Matrix Resurrections, a.k.a. Matrix 4, a.k.a. a bad movie. Who is also in Matrix Resurrections? Priyanka Chopra, a.k.a. Priyanka Chopra Jonas. And the movie that she is in that we're going to watch is called The Sky is Pink. And that is on Netflix. So next time we're watching The Sky is Pink on Netflix, starring Priyanka Chopra Jonas. Perk, are you excited?
I am. I got to correct you, though. Chad Stahelski was in The Machinist.
Oh, he was in The Machinist. Sorry, I assumed he directed. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, obviously that's a very important thread on our connection.
Well, there we go. So yeah, next week, The Sky is Pink, and we hope you watch it along with us. But until then, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.